Coming up on Weekend Magazine, understanding the value of pain.
You know, why did it happen? Did God do it? What's God trying to tell me? And frankly, the Bible really doesn't give good answers to those questions. Instead, it answers a different question, and that's to what end? What can this pain produce?
Changing the way you approach your kids each day.
What did my kids feel as they approached me? It certainly wasn't the anticipation of anything pleasant. In fact, it's more likely that as they neared the door, they began to sort of close down, shoulders hunched, getting ready for the mom bomb.
And how family camp can transform your family.
It just gets to you to see how God works in people's lives that come a Sunday on strangers and leave on Friday as friends, and they're together in communication for the rest of their lives.
Welcome to Focus on the Family's Weekend Magazine. I'm Bill Meyer, and every weekend we're here with the latest advice and encouragement about marriage, parenting, pretty much every aspect of family life. We're going to start off today with some encouragement for moms. This comes from author and speaker Carol Barnier, who has the following perspective about a parent's first face.
Coffee is not merely a delicious drink to me. I will freely admit it, you are listening to the voice of addiction. I really need my morning coffee, just 2 cups, mind you, but the idea of skipping those 2 cups is out of the question. In fact, my favorite coffee mug reads, "I drink coffee for your protection." So when my children make their way downstairs in the morning, how I greet them will depend heavily upon whether I've had cup number one, cup number two, or heaven forbid, none of the above. And then it depends on the child. Now, thankfully, God has blessed me with one child who is always calm. That's my Katie. She is compliant and eager to please and pleasant no matter how early in the morning. But I have 3 children. The other 2, Glenn and Emma, can enter the morning breakfast arena in various stages of either mute silence or long, low growls. Actually, I've been thinking maybe they should start drinking coffee. But here's the worst part. These 2 children are highly distractible. Some might even say ADHD. Their fast-moving minds will start 1,000 tasks a day that are seldom completed, leaving behind countless little piles of debris that need to be cleaned up. Before these 2 kids even arise in the morning, I have prepared a 3-minute speech with 20 items they must do in order to restore harmony to my universe and put them back in my good graces. That list and my commanding voice is what often greeted them first thing in their day. That all changed after I watched a television show in which a teenage girl explained to a friend that her mom always greeted her as though she'd been gone for months rather than hours. The welcome was sincere, even flowery, but this girl had come to expect it and see it as the love language that it was. This was a jolt of an awakening for me. This teenager knew as she walked in the door that there would be warmth and welcome and greeting. What did my kids feel as they approached me? It certainly wasn't the anticipation of anything pleasant. In fact, it's more likely that as they neared the door, they began to sort of close down, shoulders hunched, getting ready for the mom bomb. Well, I determined that from then on out, I would make sure that the first face my children saw after a period of separation would be one of welcome, one of greeting, maybe even one of delight. It seems like such a simple thing, but the impact was powerful. Now when they come down from the stairs, I say, "Good morning. How are you this morning? How did you sleep?" I offer a hug or a cup of tea. I chat with them over anything that interests them. And for my youngest, I burst into a more animated greeting using a pet name that somehow emerged for her. It's Sugity Boogity, if you must know. And she and I always stop for a quick good morning hug. If I'm picking my kids up from an event or a practice they've attended, no matter what else may be on my mind, I make sure that my first face is a smile and a sincerely warm greeting. I may still have an item in the back of my mind that needs to be addressed, and it will be, but it needn't be the first thing they hear. I want them to anticipate coming into my presence. I want them to know they'll be wrapped up in warm words of greetings. I want my first words to affirm them and let them know that they're valuable to me, that home is always longing for them, and that they are loved. What is your first face? How do you greet others? Do you give your family the same consideration that, frankly, you would probably give to a coworker or an acquaintance? Well, we should. All of those words of criticism and correction will certainly find their way back into the conversation. I mean, they pop up naturally, annoyingly so. But making a habit of friendly first faces doesn't happen naturally. It will take an awareness and an effort on your part. But in the end, this very simple act has a wonderful payoff in keeping heartstrings firmly attached. This has been Carol Barnier for Focus on the Family.
We really appreciate those parenting insights from author and speaker Carol Barnier. You can learn more about her at her website, opengifts.org.
Right now, we have some music from a Japanese-American worship leader called Junko. This song is called A Sacrifice of God.
The sacrifice of God is a broken spirit, a broken and humble heart. You will not despise my broken spirit, my broken and humble heart. The sacrifice of God is a broken spirit, a broken...
That's Junko and Sacrifice of God from her CD, The Lord's Renown. Junko shared more of her story with Focus on the Family's Dawn Ellis.
I was actually born in New York to Japanese parents who were here for business just for a few years, long enough for me and my younger sister to be born. So it's a Japanese home, and then we all went back when I was 18 months old. So I do have dual citizenship.
I see.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But so I was raised in Osaka. So most of my early recollections are all Japan, and my first language was Japanese.
So were your parents pretty comfortable with the American culture?
Oh, not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
No, no. They, you know, my mom's English has improved greatly. My dad's business English is great still to this day. But like conversational, you know, he'll talk to a child and say, as per our last conversation, heretofore,
What? I understand.
Whereas my mom knows the
colloquialism. The lingo.
Yes, a little more.
Yes.
But that took a long time. And for a long time, our family really clung on to our Japanese, because that's a little Japan that we brought over. And we had to stick together to keep that culture. And after a while, it felt like I was living a dual life. There was a Japanese me at home, and then there's the American girl outside. And sometimes the world's were different. And of course, as I got into my teen years, and as I became a Christian and learned about that, there was a drift, and it was really hard to reconcile the two.
So the religious background that you came from in Japan, tell me a little bit about that. And did that, was that something that also kind of hindered or attributed to that duality that you're talking about?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Buddhism is such an intricate part of the Japanese culture that it's not even thought of as a religion. I mean, you're Japanese, this is the way things are, you know, and a lot of the major holidays are Buddhism-based, but we just celebrate it. There's a lot of ancestral worship. We, or the Japanese people, believe that when people die, you become little gods. And so that just doesn't reconcile with our belief in God.
So it's a whole different worldview.
Yeah, it really is. And but the Japanese people are very non-religious, very, it could be spiritual, but really they don't think of religious, I don't know, thoughts like we do here in this country.
So is there not a concept of one God or some a higher power I think, or supreme being?
I think there is a concept of supreme being, but very standoffish. Started the world spinning, but then sat back and kind of
just kind of lets things go.
Yes.
I see.
So the Japanese people aren't opposed to Christianity. They're not closed-minded about it like I think it's more prevalent now in American culture. They're like, wow, Jesus, I've sort of heard about him. Okay, tell me about it. They're very open that way. But for them to accept Christ and then to live out as a Christian, that's a hard thing because the culture is really...
It's very ingrained in them.
We hope you'll join us in the weeks to come to hear more of Junko's story. But in the meantime, you can visit her website at junko.com. That's J-U-N-K-O.com.
You! You towed my car!
What's the big deal, brother?
Brother, I'm not your brother, hombre.
Hombre,
Dad,
really?
Dad.
We're getting married.
What?
Yep.
We are. Yay.
Well, that's a clip from a film called Our Family Wedding, which comes out on DVD this week. It's a romantic comedy, a little bit like the old film Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but it's got a modern twist. There's an interracial wedding where both families aren't so sure they can support the marriage or even stand being in the same room together. But before you decide to rent or buy the DVD, our movie critic Bob Waliszewski is here with a quick review. I think we've got a little bit of the flavor of the story. Bob, what other details can you fill in for us?
Yeah, this isn't rocket science. You pretty well explained it, but a little bit more. Lucia Ramirez is Hispanic, and she's in love with Marcus Boyd, an African-American. And when their parents meet, it's World War III.
Oh, no.
Lots of racial prejudice, and it's really about working toward the wedding and hoping that their parents will come in step with it. And of course, by the end of the wedding, they do. And I guess that's a positive.
So it sounds like overall some positive themes in the film.
Well, there are some positive themes. The movie highlights the value of family unity, honest communication, the resolution of old grievances, owning up to bad behavior, and catch this, extending an apology when actions call for it. I mean, when's the last time a film did that? But Our Family Wedding is mostly an eye roller filled with Viagra jokes, runaway goats. And by the way, the runaway goat involves Viagra, and I don't want to go into a lengthy explanation, but let's just say that all movie directors everywhere need to ban sexualizing farm animals in films. Let's just say, okay.
I would agree with
all right. Racial stereotyping, and all racial stereotyping is mean-spirited, but Bill, this is especially mean-spirited in this film. And the conflict that we're supposed to go through is pretty flimsy and manufactured at best.
Hmm. So overall, not a recommendation from Bob Waliszewski and the Plugged In team.
No, very disappointed. And yet it could have been. It's one of those films, again, that it could have been written where we'd be having a very different conversation today.
Sometimes I think that Hollywood ought to have some like ethics monitors that watch the screenings of these films and go, I don't think so.
Yeah, I feel like I am one, but they're not asking me. You're asking me.
That's the problem.
I hope they tune in to us today.
Well, I hope they do. What are some positive alternatives you can recommend for this weekend?
Well, I was just thinking with the new Karate Kid out, that why not go back and revisit the 1984 original if we're looking for one to rent? It wasn't a perfect film. I want to remind our listeners there were some language issues. The newer film, Bright Star, The Young Victoria, I like one going back a couple years, Nicholas Nickleby, and coming out this Friday on NBC is The Jensen Project. This is the second film when Walmart and Procter & Gamble teamed up to help redeem the Family Hour, and it's on, again, this coming Friday on NBC.
What's the basic plot of that one?
Well, this one's more intriguing than the first one, Secrets of the Mountain. This time we have a rogue scientist that's been working on some nanobots that if they're ingested in your body, they can control you. In other words, they could turn your heart off, they might make you breathe faster, and all sorts of things, and they're worried about those nanobots getting in the wrong hands of people. Somehow they've got to track this guy down, save the day, quite frankly, save the world.
All right. Well, it sounds like a good one to maybe TiVo this weekend.
It is.
Thanks,
it's pretty
Bob.
Good.
Find our full review of Our Family Wedding at our media website, PluggedIn.com. You'll also find more reviews of popular movies, TV shows, and music. It's all at PluggedIn.com.
Ever feel like you're drowning in a sea of laundry? Just can't find the time or energy to get all of your family's clothes washed, dried, folded, and put away? Well, perhaps it's because sometimes we are parents who do too much and we have children who do too little. Time to rally the troops. First, realize that everyone in the family dirties the clothes, so everyone should help get them clean and put back away, even if you have young children at your house. Here's one possible plan of attack. Place a separate laundry basket in each person's closet. And for children old enough, they also get a stain stick. You know, that handy thing that helps pre-treat the stains before they go into the wash? Each family member will stain stick their own clothes and place them in their basket. Then, on laundry day, however often that happens at your house, they will take their basket to the laundry room and sort their clothes into the appropriate piles. You know, whites, lights, darks, and so on. You, dear parent, will wash and dry the clothes. Now, after the loads are done, spread a blanket on the floor, dump all the laundry on it, and play Friday Night Find and Fold. Family members will retrieve their clothes, fold them, and put them away, all while you watch a video or have pizza and popcorn. You know, even three-year-olds can learn to put away their clothes in lower dresser drawers or to fold washcloths and kitchen towels with the family. Young children can also sort and match socks with ease. Make it your goal to work yourself out of a job. By the age of 10 or 12, all the members of your household can be doing their own laundry from start to finish. And your future sons and daughters-in-law will someday love you for it. For Focus on the Family, I'm Karen Eamon.
These are invitations to know God. And we we talk about 130, 140 million orphans, as that number fluctuates, what we say at Show Hope, these are 140 million invitations to know God in a different way.
Mm-hmm. That's Scott Hasenbaugh, the executive director of Stephen Curtis Chapman's adoption and orphan care ministry called Show Hope. Earlier this year, we featured a conversation with Scott and his wife, Carrie, who are obviously strong advocates for the millions of orphans around the world. We invited the Hasenbaughs back this weekend to talk more about their passion with Focus on the Family's Kelly Rosati.
I love the cult family story, especially because of how it just sort of all started with Dan.
Dan's the dad.
Dan and Elizabeth Culp, and how Dan was, I guess he had just entered one of those raffles for a free guitar. And
is that a concert?
Yeah, and the raffle cards were then given to Johanna's Hope.
So let's set this up. Dan's at a Stephen Curtis Chapman concert, and he wants to win a guitar.
He's a musician.
So he wants to win a guitar. And from the entering of that contest, what did God do in his life?
He gets notification through email from Show Hope about waiting children. And so Dan Culp, you know, looks at his, you know, at his email, and there is this picture of this little baby from China, Down syndrome, named Howie. And what's interesting about Howie is it's one of the children that just absolutely stole Mary Beth Chapman's heart. Actually, all of the Chapmans. They actually had gone over there and lived for like 6 weeks in China at one of our partners' facilities that cares for orphans with special needs. And she came back saying, we need to find a family for Howie. I mean, he's just amazing. And so Show Hope was featuring this amazing little child, Howie, that had Down syndrome, and I think he had an extra thumb
club
and
foot,
club
think.
Foot and mm-hmm. an extra, I mean, he's just had lots of special needs. And so Dan Culp, who was just looking to get a free guitar, sees this picture of Howie, and the Lord just moved on his heart. And as it, you know, when Dan told us the story, he actually had a sibling, a brother that was born with Down syndrome. And during back then, they used to say, you know, you should probably, to his parents, you should probably put that child in a facility where he can be cared for. You don't want it to wreck your family. Well, not only did his parents keep his sibling, but they went on to adopt two more children with Down syndrome. And so the Culps had actually never had any children, but the Lord moved on their heart to adopt Howie. And then they also went on to adopt another child with Down syndrome, another special needs orphan from China. And just the exuberance and just joy of this family that they found the perfect children for their family. I mean, it's just beautiful.
I was so struck when I met them. He was so funny, the dad, mm-hmm. just funny and light and just a joy of the Lord in him. And then with the wife, just a precious gal. I was at your fellowship event with my two older kids, and we just happened to run into this family in the pool. Mm. And I will tell you that I have never seen the picture of joy, mm-hmm. of pure joy, like I saw on the face of that little Down syndrome boy. As his daddy held him up high in the water, he loved the water and he loved his daddy. And the joy on his face was like nothing I have ever seen. And I just think that's what it's about. And to think that this little boy could still be in an institution in China, locked away, where he doesn't experience the love of parents and the love of a family, and ultimately the love of God. It's just so heartbreaking, and it's so encouraging how God uses Show Hope mm-hmm. to make that possible, because the Culps are very clear. They also were in a position where they couldn't afford to pursue this path on their own, and God used Show Hope to mm-hmm. to bring those little kids home. It was a really powerful testimony to the grace and the love mm-hmm. of the Lord.
You know, we've Scott and I have heard Stephen Mary Beth speak innumerable times. But when Stephen spoke at that event that we did with the Christian Alliance for Orphans,
it was the Orphan Sunday event down in Nashville, live from Nashville.
Which was, I think, one of the most amazing events I've ever been to. And I've been to a lot of adoption orphan events to hear Jim Daly give his testimony of having been a foster child. I mean, just was it was so powerful. But I remember that night when Stephen shared and he was talking about Maria. And that night when he was retelling the story, and Scott was actually with Steve when he met Maria, right? Mm-hmm. In front of the church. And he, I mean, Scott even said it was like, you could see that you were looking at a daddy with his daughter as they're embracing one another. And so, you know, he got in touch with Mary Beth. And I think that maybe this is another child. And Mary Beth said, absolutely not. I mean, we have three biological older children. I've started all over again. We just adopted Bam Bam. Like, we cannot do this again. But God had other plans. But I remember when he was telling the story, thinking that at that time, the two of them were thinking, we can't imagine having another child in our family. And Maria actually was a heart baby. She was a special needs child as well. And now, as he told the rest of the story, saying, we can't imagine now only having five children. And as I was sitting there in the audience, I thought, how many people out there are saying, I just can't really imagine bringing an adopted child into our home, or how could we do it? And you can't imagine that thing. But then looking on the other side of this, it's, I can't imagine not having that child. And the Chapmans are facing that. I think the story for us is we really need to be willing to accept the blessings that God might have for us.
If you or someone you know would like to know more about orphans and adoption, we'll post more information at our website, focusonthefamily.com/weekend. We'll also have a link to Show Hope's Adoption and Orphan Care Ministry. Plus, we'll let you know about a book called Successful Adoption, A Guide for Christian Families. It's by Natalie Gillespie. Again, that website is focusonthefamily.com/weekend. And now here's Dr. Julie Slattery with this week's email question.
At Focus on the Family, we often address the dangers of premarital sex in terms of disease, emotional heartbreak, and even some damaging patterns of behavior that can actually interfere with future marriage relationships. But one obvious consequence is an unplanned pregnancy and how that will disrupt your life, the life of your boyfriend or girlfriend, and even your family. A mom named Jan is dealing with this, and she writes, "Dear Focus on the Family, our 22-year-old daughter is pregnant and living at home. She's currently working and attending college. She and the father of their child are in love, but they don't feel ready to marry. What advice can you give me about helping our daughter? She is young in her faith and doesn't feel like she should marry just because she's pregnant. What would you tell her to do?" Well, Jan, this is one of those issues that Christians don't always agree on. While some pastors and counselors would insist that a pregnant couple should get married, others counsel that a shotgun wedding may be just adding one mistake to another. Now, there's a fine line between neglecting responsibilities because getting married would be difficult and taking the time to make sure that marriage is the right move. It's very common today for young adults to want the benefits of being married and playing house without the responsibilities and commitments that come with marriage. Because each situation is unique, I would suggest that your daughter seek some counseling from a trusted pastor or a Christian counselor who could help her and her boyfriend evaluate their relationship and really see if they're ready for marriage. Your job is to support your daughter, help her sort through the pressures and decisions that she's facing, and also call her to be a godly woman through this. She and her boyfriend are going to have to make the decision of whether or not to get married, but you can pray for her and encourage her to seek the Lord's guidance. For Focus on the Family, I'm Dr. Julie Slattery.
All right, sweetheart, I'm going to pull the bandage off really quick. It might sting just a little.
Son, this spanking is going to hurt me a lot more than it hurts you.
Yeah, right.
You done broke my heart. You smashed it up and kicked it in the sewer. You broke in my heart. Tossed it in the trash heap of life.
Oh, that really hurts. You know, speaking of pain in our lives, have you ever considered the benefits of pain, especially from a spiritual perspective? We've invited author Philip Yancey to join us again this weekend. Philip spoke with Focus on the Family's Dr. Julie Slattery.
Philip, one of your heroes of the faith, someone that brought you to really understand the love of Jesus, is a doctor by the name of Dr. Paul Brand.
Mm-hmm.
And he, from what I understand, work with leprosy and victims of leprosy in India. Is that correct?
That's right. Actually, he's been on Dr. Dobson's program several times and has appeared here in Colorado Springs. A remarkable man. He's British, but he spent 25 years in the UK, 25 years in India, and then 25 years here in the U.S. So he had a kind of a global perspective. And I was so blessed to be able to spend about 10 years following him around, interviewing him. And that was at the time when I was most skeptical about faith. And I look back on it now, it's as if God kind of looked down and smiled and said, well, Philip, okay, you've seen some of the worst that the church has to offer. I'll show you some of the best. Here, take Dr. Brand and examine him and see what you think. And I did. I interviewed people he went to school with and his operating room scrub nurses and his family and people. And he stood up to scrutiny. And at the end of that time, I realized that's what God had in mind when he created human beings. And so he was such a formative person in my own faith.
As we've talked and as you've written about, and specifically your book, Soul Survivor, God's brought people like Dr. Brand into your life when you were doubting to show you aspects of his character and to really answer the questions that you had about faith.
Mm-hmm.
What was it specifically about Dr. Brand that the Lord taught you?
The word humility jumps to mind because I've never known a more humble person. Here's a person who could have won the Nobel Prize. I mean, he was that astute medically and was very creative in the things that he was able to accomplish. Anybody in his medical world just speaks with reverence of him, and yet you'd never know it. In his house, he always had his shoes off, so he's barefoot, and he's making his own tomato sandwiches from tomatoes that he grew in his organic garden out back, you know, and would never fly first class or business class. He's always in the back of the airplane. He's just one of those people who was genuinely humble to the core, and I came to admire that quality. In fact, that's the quality we're told we should have that's like Jesus, who, you know, God, who had all the prerogatives of Godhead, humbled himself to become the person that he chose to become.
Now, you and Dr. Brand wrote a book called The Gift of Pain.
Yes.
That sounds like, just in the title, an oxymoron.
An oxymoron, yeah. Right. The Gift of Pain. Yeah, and that's one of the things that attracted me to him. I was writing a book early in my career called Where is God When It Hurts? That's where we first met. I was reading a lot of books on the problem of pain, the challenge of pain, the curse of pain. And my wife brought home a speech that he had given called The Gift of Pain. And he came up with ideas I had never encountered anywhere, because he was the one who discovered that the disease leprosy, one of the oldest and most feared diseases, all of the symptoms of leprosy, going blind and losing your fingers, toes, that kind of thing that you see in movies and you hear about, all of those came about simply because people stopped feeling pain. And when you take away pain, we destroy ourselves. We have no more protection. And so he would say, if I had one gift to give my leprosy patients, it would be the gift of pain. In fact, he spent several million dollars trying to develop an artificial pain system because they were literally destroying themselves.
So that's inherent in leprosy, is that because I can't feel my fingers, I might put them in a fire or I might cut them. Is that correct?
Yes, or a very simple example. We blink every 10, 20 seconds or so. And the reason we blink is there's a little tiny pain cell that tells you your eyes are getting dry. It's at a subconscious level, but if you try not to blink, okay, I'm not going to blink for the next 5 minutes. I guarantee you, you're going to feel excruciating pain. It'll force you to blink. And that's a good thing. That's a protective thing that keeps your eye lubricated. Well, a person with leprosy, the bacillus of leprosy attacks those pain cells so that they stop functioning. And that the person with leprosy no longer feels the need to blink. It no longer hurts. So they go all day, all night, without closing their eyes. And rather quickly, their eyes will dry out and they will literally go blind simply because they lack that little pain cell.
Now, I'm guessing that you've really learned to apply that concept to the spiritual life. And how, if we don't feel the pain that we're supposed to feel spiritually, we'll die.
Yeah, I would summarize what I've learned about pain in the Bible in this way. automatically we want to figure out why. Why, you know, why did it happen? Did God do it? What's God trying to tell me? And frankly, the Bible really doesn't give good answers to those questions. Instead, it answers a different question, and that's to what end? What can this pain produce? Okay, it's not good. It's a bad thing. But even bad things can produce good. And the Bible's very clear in the great passages on pain in 1 Corinthians, James, 1 Peter, Romans. They all say pain produces patience and endurance and hope and character. And it spells out that even though a negative thing can happen, a disability, even paralysis, some of these terrible things, God can create good out of that negative thing. God can redeem the bad thing. Of course, the greatest example we have is the crucifixion. The worst thing that could happen in history, the murder of God's own son, we now call Good Friday. You know, not bad Friday, tragic Friday, but Good Friday. Redeemed pain is the answer.
But it's in our DNA to want to avoid pain. And when we feel pain, to want to numb it, to want to short-circuit it, somehow just get rid of it. We don't want to walk through grief. We don't want to walk through disappointment, heartache. What is the purpose of staying in pain?
Pain is a language, and what we need to do is learn to listen to the language, because if you just try to numb it, it doesn't go away. The problem that caused the pain is still there. You've just taken care of the pain. The same thing would be true, for instance, in a marriage. If every time there's some sort of tension, if you just go take a tranquilizer and don't deal with it, it's not going to disappear. It's going to come back next week in a more virulent form, most likely. Mm-hmm. So the pain is just a language that says, this is something that you need to pay attention to. You may need some outside help. You may need some medication, depending on what the pain is. But the main thing is, it's a language that your body is using to tell you, pay attention. This is important. You've got to listen.
How about even just from a spiritual side, though, paying attention to God? You know, when pain is always, well, typically an indicator of something we're losing here on earth, whether it's we have a difficult economic situation, you lost a job, there's an infidelity in marriage, you lost a child to death, but some kind of grieving and groaning. Could it be that God maybe didn't cause that pain, but is using that pain to get our attention for something other than this world, or just to grow spiritually?
Oh, I agree completely. I won't be able to come up with a quote, but in C.S. Lewis's great book, The Problem of Pain, he talks about pain being God's megaphone.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes God whispers, but when he shouts, it's usually through something like pain. And economic crisis, that's a good one, because we're all in the middle of that right now. That's a time when we're really forced to reconsider what our faith is based on, you know, what our security is based on. Is it based on our what used to be my 401k, which is now a 201k?
Yeah.
Is that what it's based on? Or is it based on my trust in God, who can take care of me? The same thing is true with illness. Do I trust that even this can be used for good in me and my family? It's a megaphone. It's something where we're forced to pay attention. I've got a friend, Anne Lamott, who's a writer, and she says she has two favorite prayers. One of them is thanks, 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 and one of them is help, help, help. And there are a lot of help, help, help prayers going right now. I remember on September 11, my church opened its doors, and it was full that night. No announced service, but people were hurting. They wanted to go somewhere. They wanted to call out to God. And for the next 6 weeks, church attendance went up 25-30%. Then it went back
down.
Until
some of that pain
went away.
Then
it went back down. That's right. The pain went away. Yeah. And we lost sight of it. But let's listen to those moments when the pain is there, and let's use those moments to turn to God.
We'll hear more from Philip Yancey in the weeks to come. But in the meantime, you can request a copy of the book he co-wrote with Dr. Paul Brand called The Gift of Pain. We have copies available at our website, focusonthefamily.com/weekend. And while you're there, we recommend you review Dr. Slattery's entire conversation with Philip Yancey. Look for the Tough Questions box at focusonthefamily.com/weekend. Now, here's a special report on camping and the value of family camp.
We don't want to walk through grief. We don't want to walk through disappointment, heartache. What is the purpose of staying in pain?
Pain is a language, and what we need to do is learn to listen. If you just go take a tranquilizer and don't deal with it, it's not going to disappear. It's going to come back next week in a more virulent form, most likely. Mm-hmm. So the pain is just a language that says, this is something that you need to pay attention to.
That's Maria, a mother of three kids who've been going to camp for about 5 years now. And obviously her family has experienced a remarkable impact from camping. This month, we're exploring the topic of Christian-based camping with a couple of experts, Greg Hunter, the president and CEO for the Christian Camp and Conference Association, and Tim McKinney directs Family and Adult Ministry at Red Cloud Ranch in Southwest Colorado. These gentlemen join Focus on the Family's John Fuller in the studio.
It's when the pain is there, and let's use those moments to turn to God.
We'll hear more from Philip Yancey in the weeks to come. But in the meantime, you can request a copy of the book he co-wrote with Dr. Paul Brand called The Gift of Pain. We have copies available at our website, focusonthefamily.com/weekend. And while you're there, we recommend you review Dr. Slattery's entire conversation with Philip Yancey. Look for the Tough Questions box at focusonthefamily.com/weekend.
I want to be a teacher when I grow up.
Veterinarian.
A singer.
You know she can be anything.
An artist.
A mom and a rock star.
But she'll always be your princess. Introducing Raising a Modern Day Princess, a modern parent's guide to bringing up girls with solid character and unwavering faith in Jesus Christ, no matter what they want to be when they grow up.
A firefighter, just like my dad.
You'll learn how to instill confidence in your daughter, strong values, and most of all, a solid identity in Jesus Christ, wherever her journey takes her. Visit focusonthefamily.com/resources or call 800-A-FAMILY for Raising a Modern Day Princess. That's focusonthefamily.com/resources or call 800-A-FAMILY for Raising a Modern Day Princess.
Do I have to wear makeup?
This is Focus on the Family's Weekend Magazine with Dr. Bill Meyer. Now, here's a special report on camping and the value of family camp.
This month, we're exploring the topic of Christian-based camping with a couple of experts, Greg Hunter, the president and CEO for the Christian Camp and Conference Association, and Tim McKinney directs Family and Adult Ministry at Red Cloud Ranch in Southwest Colorado. These gentlemen join Focus on the Family's John Fuller in the studio.
So, Greg, as chairman of the Christian Camp and Conference Association, you spend a lot of time out in the woods, and then you have a lot of bug spray, and it's usually that kind of thing for you and for all the members of your association, right? And I'm being facetious.
Sure, not quite. You know, one of the myths of Christian camping or camping in general, as it's organized in the association, is that people have to go out and spend the time around a campfire with no running water, no toilets, no showers, and generally, it's just not that way.
That's a tough sell to a lot of moms out there.
I would think that it would be a tough sell to my wife, who would not be interested in that environment mm-hmm. at all. And yet, family camp, as we know it today, is much better than that. There are amenities from kind of the rustic camp where things are a little bit old-fashioned, maybe not as updated, but always with a roof over your head and a bed beneath you as you sleep, and generally running water and showers of some kind. So the moms who are hesitant, or even dads who are hesitant to get out and really rough it, don't generally have to do that at the family camps.
So a lot of family camps, in reality, have very nice facilities, or at least very comfortable facilities.
Yes.
And a lot of amenities, as you've indicated. My wife has loved going to a few family camps because she doesn't have to cook. She doesn't have to clean. She just has the kids to worry about. And even then, a lot of the time, that's not a big deal because the kids are off doing other activities.
That's right. Well, and it's one of the great benefits, I think, of family camp is that as they're done right, that is that mom and dad get time together, grown-up time, whether it's to get recreation or to learn together or just to build their relationship, while kids are often cared for by counselors who are there dedicated especially to their quality of experience. So that's a great time for families, not only to spend that time alone, but then to come back together for joint activities as well.
Okay, now, Tim, I have inside information that you really don't like camping the way I first described it, and that is going out in the woods and living out of a tent. If that's the case, how in the world were you thinking of Christian camping, and how in the world did you end up being involved in helping lead a Christian family camp?
First, let me say I was not thinking about camping.
Okay.
Let's just put it that way. I am one of those people who did not come from a camping background. I think I went to camp one time when I was about 10 years old. We lived in Phoenix, Arizona. The thought about going into the middle of the San Juan National Forest up in the mountains of Colorado was the furthest thing from our mind. And my wife, I need to be careful here, is not exactly fond of snow, shall we put that. Winter is not a thing that just jumps into her head. The opportunity was presented to us, we listened to it, and we actually came up to the property, looked at it, and in the course of time, we went back home, and I saw God take my wife in 3 weeks from a solid no, I could never do that, to Tim, I think the Lord is leading us there. So we ended up working in a family ministry at a camp in Colorado. And I tell everybody we had a vertical learning curve that first year. It was nothing that either of us have ever done.
But what have you seen God doing at the camp? And what is it that has made you recognize that you want to be a part of this ministry?
Well, I think it's all about the way God grows each of us. I mean, I came from this background. There was all of this experience, and here was something that neither of us had ever done before. And so there's always a little bit of challenge in that. And we began the process. There is something about this family ministry that words are very difficult to describe it. As Greg was talking earlier, there's this kind of misconception about what goes on. And to moms, I will say this, moms is one of the focal points of our ministry. We want them to understand from the moment they arrive, they aren't going to do anything. I mean, they don't cook, they don't plan, they don't drive, they aren't on a schedule, they don't have to do anything. And I have a story I love to tell. It takes about 2 days, and all the kids are divided. The young men sit at this table. The young women sit at this table when they have dinner. They're the first ones in line. They eat like Marines, and they hit the door. I have yet to see a mom get up and chase them down. In fact, most of the time, they're going to get up and they're look at their husband and say, "Where are the kids?" He says, "I don't know." You know, but it's that sense of, oh, peace. What we try to do is create this environment where there's no distractions. Where we are, the cell phone doesn't work. There's no TV in the room, no radio in the room. There's nobody driving by. You walk outside and you hear the wind and you hear the river and you hear that kind of a thing. And in that place, in that setting, we specifically try to create 4 environments. And that is one where there's a time where you can be alone with God, where you and your wife can be alone together with God, where you and your family can be as one with God, and then kind of a sense of a community in the evening where you and the other people that are there at the same time do things together in that community. And when that happens, you see people kind of decompress, and with no distraction, they end up amazingly doing things with their family as a family. We try very hard to get people to do things as a whole unit, where it's mom, dad, and the children.
And Greg, you represent, I don't know how many camps, but there are so many different approaches to what Christian family camping is all about. I imagine what Tim has described is indicative of some, but not all.
That's right. There are about 900 camps almost in our association. Not all of them do family camp, but many of them do. They even set aside a week from youth camp to do family camp because they realize what Tim has said is so powerful and impacting. Mm-hmm. Impacting folks. So what we see, what I've seen personally, actually, as an adult guest host, is as families start to do that bonding time that Tim mentions, so much of the distraction from their daily life melts away, and they start to realize that they can get along, that they do have some shared interests, that there's something that bonds them together. It might be their faith. It might be their other interests. Whereas parents, when it's really busy, they think, well, I have to do some other things, and mm-hmm. it's so hard to break into my teenager's life and into their mind. Mm-hmm. Out there, there's nothing to break through except just if they'll sit and listen and we can talk together. And so the power of that I've seen over and over.
Well, we've gotten hooked. The Fuller family has gotten hooked on family camp, and my kids love it. They love the activities. My wife loves the opportunity for us to be together often, but not always. And I'm sure, gentlemen, that you hear stories of people who walk away saying, that was absolutely transformational. I mean, what happened there at that camp is something that will, it's rocked our world, and our family will never be the same.
That's right. Well, I've seen it. I've sat in the back of a room where at the end of a week, people are encouraged to stand up and say what camp meant to them. So it might be a 9-year-old saying, I caught my first trout in the mm-hmm. pond, or I rode a horse for the first time and I love it, or I love just time that my family can be together. I've never felt it like that before. But for me as a dad, the most moving times were when a father would stand up and generally choking back tears, will say, I just want to start by apologizing to my family. I'm sorry, kids, that I haven't been there for you as a dad, mm-hmm. that I put my work ahead of you. And I apologize. And honey, I'm sorry I haven't been the husband that you need me to be. And I certainly haven't been the follower of God or the Christian that I want to be in leading my family in our faith. And this has given me a new perspective. And I'm committing to you now that I will be that man. Mm-hmm. Not a dry eye in the house when that happens. But you see that. And then he sits down and another guy stands up. So to say that it's a one-off thing, Tim, you've probably seen it many times.
It goes over and over. Every Friday we have a closing ceremony and people are given the opportunity to share what they've seen and been experiencing with God that week. And I have one story. I have a very difficult time sometimes getting through this. I'm going to give you something on.
We'll post more information about Greg Hunter and Tim McKinney at our website, focusonthefamily.com/weekend. We also have an information sheet for you on how to find the right camping experience for your family. Again, our website is focusonthefamily.com/weekend.
And that wraps up this edition of Focus on the Family's Weekend Magazine. Thanks so much for joining us today. Next weekend, we'll learn more about Christian camping and how it's training tomorrow's leaders. Also, how to help parents manage their busy kids. And are you disappointed with God? We'll talk more about that next week. Until then, have a wonderful week with your family and hope you're enjoying your summer.
Learn more about upcoming Weekend Magazine broadcasts at focusonthefamily.com/weekend or call us toll-free at 1-800, the letter A and the word family. Weekend Magazine is a production of this station and Focus on the Family.